Welcome to another episode of Morning Coffee with your host, Rick Alexander. I started this show to talk about all of the interesting, complex, paradoxical, and sometimes uncomfortable aspects of the human experience. If you get anything from this show, the greatest compliment you could give me is to share this show with somebody that you think the message may resonate with, or to head to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. Additionally, if you want to interact with me, you can follow me at @RickAlexander_ on Instagram. Without further ado, on to the show. Maraboli said, "Incredible change happens in your life when you decide to take control of what you do have power over, instead of craving control over what you don't." Welcome to this bonus edition of Morning Coffee with Rick Alexander. The name of this chapter that I'm going to read and talk about is called Buttons That Make Us Feel Good. Now, I'm going to take this out of the book, so it won't be in the revised edition. But if you are digging the stuff that I've been reading in the last couple of weeks, you can get the full book at audible.com. Just search Ambitious Heroes in Heartache or check out the show notes of this episode. Now, as I release the revised edition, I'm going to leave that original version up so that you'll still be able to get access to, for example, this chapter, which will eventually be taken out of the book. But let's get into it. In order to fully understand yourself, what you truly need is objectivity. You need to step away from the emotions and try to understand yourself as if you were someone else. Observe your thoughts, your actions, and the things that you say. Look for patterns of behavior and feeling so that you can deduce the motives that inhabit you. You may find in doing this that you're clinging on to stories or narratives about yourself, others, or the world that simply aren't serving you. When you're clinging to a narrative with a strong emotional tie, you're not free to learn from it. As it turns out, evolution has made doing this much more problematic than you might imagine. Here's why. The fact that you or I can judge ourselves at all gets us into what it really means to be human. We're aware that we are. Being self-aware can make living much more difficult, namely because we're aware of the fact that we're going to die, that we can fail at things along the way, and we can judge whether or not we acted rightly in any given situation. This knowing is our consciousness. The price we pay for knowing is anxiety. As we are aware of the world, we are simultaneously aware of the vast unknown elements that constantly surround us every day. Anxiety is the result of your psyche contending with that unknown. So, you know, think back to the last chapter. You know, the way that you approach the unknown really says a lot about how you engage with it and whether or not it does produce anxiety, you know, or all of the things that you've ever wanted for yourself, right? Because both of those are on the other side of the mystery. But you've got to go there to know what's there. Coming to terms with the realities of our existence has caused us to evolve psychological coping mechanisms over time in order to dampen the blow that they have on our psyche. Our psyche is fragile, but it knows how to protect itself. These coping mechanisms make objectively assessing yourself and how you are doing in any given task much more difficult than you might imagine. We essentially lie to ourselves to protect our own fragile ego, and we do it often. Once we lie to ourselves, our brains are so incredibly good at confabulating supporting evidence that if we never stop to question it and try to create some objectivity, it's likely that we'll go on for years without a realistic view of ourselves or our behavior. And I'm sure that you have seen people that are like that. It's like, this guy is not existing in reality at all. But it's so easy for us to lie to ourselves and confabulate evidence. And our mind has an interest in keeping us stuck and keeping us where we are. Because remember, our brain has sort of two reasons for its existence within us, right? The first is so that we can survive, and the second is so that we can find meaning. And sometimes those find themselves at odds. We've been breaking that down for the last couple of weeks. But it's important to get some objectivity from all of these thoughts, all of these narratives, all of these stories that you're telling yourself. And the reason is because if you can get some objectivity to it, you can start to find where you are lying to yourself. Right? And when you figure that out, now you no longer have to live in delusion, right? Because delusion creates a lot of the suffering that we go through. Let's get back into it. So to add to the complexity of our situation, understand that when you are rationalizing your own behavior to yourself, your brain is doing so outside of your awareness. Without thinking twice, we tell ourselves that we're doing better than we actually are, or we will tell ourselves we're less capable than we actually are. In both cases, our mind will confabulate facts in order to pick up its own, to back up its own theories. We often make things up, such as these, that act as barriers meant to keep us from reaching too far into the unknown. The problem is that all of these coping mechanisms make accurately gauging our lives extremely difficult. You've seen that too, right? People that just feel like they are so incapable of getting to the place that they want to get to or doing the things that they want to do with their lives, right? And they look to the world to confirm their suspicions about their inadequacies or their lack of capability. But what you find is what you tune into is what you get. And so you can work on not allowing your mind to validate all of these thoughts, like the worst thoughts about yourself or your inadequacies. And in that, you're given more freedom, right? And that's why we do this work. That's the point of paying attention to yourself objectively. It's because if you do, you will be given the ability to actually choose the narrative that you live out. But if you don't make that choice, you'll end up living out a narrative anyway. You just don't have the choice in what it is that you live out. We usually can't see through our self-deceit, and so we just continue down the path. Nothing ever too wrong, nothing ever too right. When we get in the habit of lying to ourselves, the best thing that we can hope for is that we start feeling really disconnected from our own lives in a major way. This internal dissonance is often the error message that we need to start steering the ship in a different direction, or to at least begin reassessing what we've already taken for granted. Making assumptions about our emotional well-being without actually checking in on yourself is a breeding ground for quiet desperation. This is how the entire world ends up living in delusion about who they really are and the position in life that they occupy. True self-awareness happens when you lift the blinders and stop lying to yourself. You simply cannot be delusional about who you are and still expect to act in the world with much success. You'll never get where you want to be if you don't know where you are starting from. And that's why we do this. That's why we own all of our inadequacies and our incapabilities, right? It's not that we dwell on those things, but we need to understand where we truly are. Where are we deficient? Where are our actual strengths? And so when we get a really good picture of ourselves, now we've got a foundation that we can build a real life off of. You just cannot do that from delusion. And there's something about the human psyche, about the way that our minds have evolved to keep us safe and to keep us in homeostasis and where we are, that delusion is our default method or our default mode, you might say, of moving through the world. This is what it means to be asleep. It is to live in delusion. People are often content to live in this delusion because it feels safe to them. One of the things that happens to people when they start doing more emotional deep work is that they are struck by deep feelings of overwhelm after they begin. Often what's happening here is that for the first time they are comprehending their own behavior and the mess feels like it's a lot to sort through. After getting a full view, people will pull the blinds back down and do their best to bury the discomfort because awareness does not go backwards. They will eventually have to contend with the responsibilities that are waiting. When we aren't self-aware and we're simply doing what we should do or what we've been told to do, then it isn't our fault when things don't work out or our life doesn't turn out to be as good as expected. Self-awareness brings with it the responsibility to act on our capabilities, and facing our true potential tends to scare the living shit out of us. It shifts the onus onto us, and we realize that no one but us is responsible for the quality of our lives. And I would say people stay willingly asleep. That's why they do it, right? It's because... yeah, because if you take full ownership, that means when things don't work out, it's all on you. There's nobody to blame, and that's tough for the psyche. But if you can own that process, if you can own all of who you are, again, you at least are positioned to do something about it. If you are interested in that, next Friday, I am airing an episode with Aaron Guyette where we really talk about ownership and leadership. So that'll be a great episode to check out if you're interested in these ideas. All right. You'll also have to work on overcoming the mind's affinity to take the path of least resistance. As you dive into your own inner game, it's possible that your subconscious mind will turn you away from going too deep. Often when you begin confronting the uncomfortable parts of your life, you'll find your subconscious has shifted your perspective to something else, something with less friction to ease the struggle. In writing this book, I personally find myself picking up my phone at random times to scroll mindlessly on social media. If I look back carefully, that happens every single time I'm having trouble making sense of a topic or connecting dots in my mind. Your mind will choose apathy over struggle if you give it the chance. The positive aspect of this self-awareness conundrum is that you will eventually learn enough to see that you don't really have the right to pass judgment over your life, specifically negative judgment. You simply don't know enough about yourself to know of what you might actually be capable. Since each of our potential is built upon what we do and not what we innately have, any kind of success in life is contingent on you putting your hat in the ring. It is not enough to simply sit back and assume anything about your own capabilities when you haven't, one, looked at your life objectively, and two, actually gotten in the arena with clear eyes and began to work. Reality rarely provides the feedback that we assumed it would. Our assumptions kill us. Our assumptions about ourselves, about our capabilities, about the people in our lives. When we haven't actually gotten the arena and done the work, we just cannot make assumptions. We can, but they won't be accurate. Another thing here too, I was talking to my group in the trials. Of course, for you guys that are have been listening to this for a while, you know the trials course registration is now open. September 1st through September 11th, it will be officially open, but I think the waitlist is open now. I was talking to the guys because something happens in these kind of like 12-week courses that people do. I noticed it in myself, and you know, now I've put hundreds of people through my online courses, so I've gotten a good sort of a group of data to learn from. And what happens is people ebb and flow, right? And this is your interest in anything in life is going to ebb and flow. Now, when you're talking about doing any kind of emotional deep work, healing work, growth work to some degree, what happens is oftentimes you will come away from it for 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 4 weeks, and then you'll get excited about it and you'll come back into it. It's like, well, why does that happen? Why do I come away from it? It's like, well, this is a reason to think objectively about yourself. Don't get caught up in the emotions of it. Just try to understand it. And what you'll find is if you can come to terms, if you can figure out what your triggers are, you can find out what are the things that take me off of my path away from my goal. And then you can start to live your life in a way so that when those things come up, you are more mindful about it. You're more conscious of where your attention is going. Like I was telling you, it was like almost life-changing to me when I realized, oh, every time I have a concept that I can't fully make sense of, I'm on social media. It takes me away from the book, sometimes for months. And so just coming to terms with that allows me to enter into all of these situations more consciously, again, giving me the choice on where I go with my life. One such area that we tend to walk around extremely misinformed about ourselves is in the type of control that we tend to exhibit over our own lives. We think we have control when we don't. We feel victimized when in fact we're the reason for our own suffering, and perhaps the biggest transgression against our own well-being. We exhibit ownership over an outcome that we have no business trying to control. We need to become aware of how we do each of these things in our own lives so that we can learn to combat them. When the voice pops up in your head and tells you that you aren't good enough for X, Y, or Z thing, or when you find yourself telling yourself not to pursue something out of fear of failure, it's important to realize that the voice is playing off of the uncontrollable factors in your life because you have no idea if you'll fail. You have no idea if you're good enough. There actually is no way of knowing without stepping into the unknown, so you find that you are in a trap. Only action will free you from it. But by filling the unknown with negative situations that you are afraid to step into, you see stepping forward as impossible. This is the game that the inner tyrant plays to keep you small. One of the ways that we can transcend this trap is by focusing on the controllable factors in our lives and building a case for ourselves. We need to empower the voice that knows that after you've done all that you can, there's nothing left to do but step forward. Sometimes when you get in an argument about something, you're passionate, you'll find that you're digging deep in your knowledge base to lay out the facts for why you're correct. We see this often in areas where there's a team aspect. We see it in politics and in professional sports. People will cite studies, pull out random facts and data points, and if all reason fails, they'll often bring in intangibles, such as emotions, morals, and ethics, in order to prove their case for why their team or candidate is superior. Incredibly, we don't use the same vigor when lying out a case for ourselves. We'll try all the performance hacks in the world before we try just believing in ourselves. At the end of the day, if we aren't our biggest supporters, who will be? Imagine a world where people build a case for themselves as much as they do for their favorite candidate or sports team. Instead, we tend to feel like we aren't capable of more than we are currently doing, so we pacify ourselves and place our hope and convictions in something outside of ourselves. Hell, the sports team or the candidate. Perhaps the candidate or the team that we've been defending. Again, I maintain the position that our lack of knowledge about ourselves doesn't give us the right to form an opinion about our ultimate potential. Chances are that you have drastically underestimated that which you are capable. I say all of this as a matter of fact and not motivation. Until you do the work, you just don't know enough about yourself to know what you can and can't do. In the end, if we want our lives to take on meaning, we must exhibit the proper amount of control over them. Taking control isn't about ownership over every aspect of our lives, but rather having an accurate view over what we actually can control. Perhaps more importantly, it is letting go of what we can't control. The nuances of the human psyche are consistently shown to influence our own behaviors in ways that we, the person experiencing the behavior, aren't aware. This fact continues to lay out a strong case for the radical self-awareness simply due to the fact, this fact continues to lay out a strong case for radical self-awareness simply due to the fact that without such self-awareness, we will continue to live our lives at the mercy of feelings and emotions that we don't understand. When impulse guides our actions, it gives us the impression that we are a victim in our own lives, always subject to something beyond our control. For the tens of thousands of people that feel disconnected from their lives, much of that disconnection could be solved simply by giving ownership to the right areas of their lives and letting go of the wrong ones. In the end, our legacy on this earth and whether or not we are satisfied with our time here will be impacted by our ability to notice our implicit actions and bring them into alignment with what we want and not what we've grown accustomed to accepting. This is the ultimate key to a good life, but don't mistake its simplicity for ease of integration. Your body, and specifically your nervous system and your unconscious mind have trouble discerning a feeling from a thought versus a feeling from something you are actually experiencing in the world. This fact alone can have serious implications on the amount of dominion that you have over your own life. For example, if you're in a romantic relationship and you're constantly thinking about what might go wrong, perhaps you were cheated on in the past and can't stop dwelling on it, then your body is going to constantly feel as if that is happening now. It will be virtually impossible for you to be happy in that relationship as you contend with feelings of betrayal. This will only occur based on your thought of a past experience and not on the reality that you are living in now. Subtle mental programming idiosyncrasies like this are consistently making us feel a certain type of way about what we are experiencing. It can be difficult to know whether that matches up to reality or whether we are just living out a narrative that we've already decided is correct. We often do this despite what reality presents us with. And if you are interested in this idea, go back a couple of weeks if you haven't already and listen to the episode where I talk about letting go of expectations, because that's really what this is, right? It's our expectations that corral us into behavior. But what's interesting, what I'm talking about here was this group of research I came upon when I was studying or reading for this book about how our physiology is actually reacting to our thoughts. And that's why visualization works, for example, in sports. But it can work against us just as much as it could work for us. The same can't be said for any other facet of your life. If you think you aren't good enough to get a certain... The same can be said for any other facet of your life. If you think you aren't good enough to get a certain job or a certain amount of money, your body is going to feel that at a cellular level. How could what you want in the world possibly work out if deep down you already feel as though it hasn't? The reason so many people have trouble taking control of their own lives is because of the reality that is existing below the surface of their lives. You are a victim of yourself much more than you are any outside circumstances. In psychological circles, the control over our own lives is known as having a sense of agency, and it's highly correlated with an overall sense of well-being. Because we know just how deeply this sense of agency affects our overall well-being, it is something that we have to start taking more seriously. Often that means dissecting our own lives to see where we can exhibit agency and where we cannot. Commonly, people who can't seem to get out of the grip of difficult times find that it is because what they are trying to control is something that has already happened or something that may never happen. In doing so, we squander what we actually have control over, which is only ourselves in this moment. The secret is that the moment is almost always perfect. We've just built a society that seems to have grown immune to it. We give our past permission to label us now, and we allow the future to scare us from ever getting too far from the nest. When we continue to try and control what can't be controlled, we keep ourselves in the problem that can't be solved. It's also helpful to understand that our conscious experience in this world isn't a perfect representation of reality. It's subject to our own filters, and because we know the flaws of our own filters, we know that much of the way we experience the world is also flawed. For a simplistic view of how this flaw plays out, consider an observation by a sociologist in the 1960s, James Henslin. Henslin observed cab drivers in St. Louis who often played craps while in their downtime. Henslin observed that when the drivers needed a high number, they tended to roll the dice harder, and they were softer when they needed a lower number. Of course, how hard you throw the dice has no bearing over the chances that any number will come up. Each of us do this throughout our own lives in subtle ways, though. We try to exhibit control because it makes us feel good. Many of us cling to irrational agency that doesn't exist for this reason. Thus, the case for objectivity, if we want to actually increase our chances of positive results and experience instead of just feeling as though we have them. Chances are that you do this quite often with a number of placebo buttons that have been placed in our everyday lives. The closed door button on an elevator doesn't actually do anything, yet you continue to press it whenever you get inside. The same thing goes for the button at most crosswalks, despite the fact that the walk light is linked to the traffic patterns and has nothing to do with the actual button. The fact that there is no causal relationship between the action and the outcome doesn't seem to make a difference as long as people feel as though they are making a difference. While this is easy to see with the use of placebo buttons, I can't help but wonder where many of us are exhibiting this false sense of control in our lives in many different ways. The detriment in this behavior isn't in pushing one of the many placebo buttons that surround us. The detriment lies in the internal narrative that ensues when we try to control something that isn't controllable. We evolve to feel good in the moment instead of seeking the truth, but over time, the truth becomes required to feel good, since what we want in life are actual results. Many people don't have a frame of reference for what they are doing wrong to cause their own discontentment because they have fabricated so much truth, and I put that in parentheses, that it's too far from reality to set them free. This false sense of control tends to imply a narrative in your head. In short, if you believe that you are affecting the outcome when in fact it is random, then when the outcome is averse to what we want, the implication is that it's our fault. You see this in relationships when one partner chooses to leave another. If you've ever been left, you know how easy it is to blame yourself in that situation. Realistically, someone leaving is a reflection of them, what they value, and what they want. That's why we must only focus on how we show up in any given situation. Otherwise, we end up carrying around a burden that isn't ours to carry. The same thing goes for the way that a parent might leave their children. That decision has been made independent of the departed. However, the person that is left behind will continue to blame herself over and over, and often this blame will end up shaping the things that person believes about herself. She might believe that she is unworthy or incapable of being loved when she has nothing to do with the true situation at hand, or when that has nothing to do with the true situation at hand. The actual reality is that when a person decides to walk away from any relationship, whether it's a business dealing or a romantic partnership, that decision is squarely on the person leaving. Oftentimes, we might try to get leverage over another or to control them enough so that they don't leave, but this stems from a false sense of agency. You have no control over what another person does. Instead, our agency should be placed on ourselves. We can think about the kind of lover, partner, or person that we want to be, and then we can affect the way we show up in the situation that calls us to be that person. That is literally it. The rest is out of our control. The truth is that you'll never be able to be anything for anyone else that they can't be for themselves, vice versa. Your well-being is contingent on you understanding that. You must stop blaming yourself for situations that you never had control of in the first place. If time reflecting on a certain situation doesn't reveal that you wish you would have acted differently because differently is truly what you wanted as opposed to being different for someone else, then you've learned a lesson that is immensely valuable. You know You now know how to author your situations going forward, and you have a standard for yourself. You just have to be careful that the standard that you have for yourself and your behavior is a true reflection of what you want and not what someone else might want or what you think they might need. What someone else might or might not want is a moving target that you have no hope of ever hitting. When we influence the behavior over the part of the relationship that we do have control over, us, then we're doing all that we can. Outside of our relationships, we tend to feel victimized by other aspects of our lives as well, which often stems from being unaware of the level of control that we actually have. The jobs that we do, the place that we live, and the amount of money we make are all usually a matter of our own control. Yet these are the things that we tend to believe we're at the mercy of. Quite honestly, I'm not sure what's more incredible. The fact that in the 21st century, humans have landed in a place where we have the ability to be, do, or have whatever it is that we might want, or the fact that most of us act as if that is not true. We feel stuck in our situations in life, and we self-impose a large amount of the rigidity around our lives that cage us into a certain way of being. That cage is only open when we direct our attention inward and realize that it is only ourselves that are holding the keys to the cage that we feel trapped in. See, final page here. The truth is, you've already thought enough about what's transpired and what you could have done differently. You've already run through the scenarios about what might go wrong later. All that matters now is that you decide what you want going forward and then further decide to show up for yourself in this moment in that way. Whenever you find that you have fallen off the path a little bit, recognize that you are acting out of previous programming. If you want different, then you go back to showing up for yourself in the way that you want to. You don't chastise yourself because you weren't acting out of your conscious mind. In most cases, self-destructive behavior is wounded behavior. Just correct it when you notice it and move on. Over time, as you become less adversarial with your life and you become the one authoring the narratives that you live out, you will exhibit less and less of the behavior that you don't like. The reality is that things are not always going to work out. Things are going to fall apart frequently because we're humans and we're clumsy, slow to learn, and we prioritize how we feel over what we ultimately want. There are a great many more things that won't work out because of situations that are out of your control, but this book isn't about them, it's about you. Have you ever had a relationship end, romantic or otherwise, and instantly thought about all of the things that you could have done better? Often we will beat ourselves up about this, whether it is true or not. We keep ourselves stuck in our own hell simply because we know we acted outside of our own values, and the dissonance associated with that feeling is tearing us up. This brings the chapter full circle. You can't control what's happened. Only get some objectivity to it, learn from it, and apply those lessons to the one thing you get to control going forward. That's you in this moment. So that's it. The thing about this that I would love for you guys to recognize, and this is something, you know, throughout this pandemic, it's come up a lot, right? Every pseudo wannabe motivational speaker out there is like, focus on what you can control. Stop focusing on what you can't control. That is all true. Of course, right? But I would like you to think a bit deeper about that problem. And that's what I was hoping to draw attention to with this chapter. And I want you to realize or ask yourself whether the inverse is also true, right? So sometimes we, like, it's like, think about these cab drivers that roll hard when they want a bigger number, right? Now, this isn't changing the number that actually comes up. But if you believe that you can control things that you can't, when those things don't work out, because all of this is subject to randomness and to chance and to this intense mystery that we have no control over, the implied narrative is that it's your fault, right? And so then we take that shame or guilt on and we act as though it's our fault. And then we're not controlling the one thing that we actually do have control over, which is showing up now, a new you in this moment. So that's all. It's about realizing the things that you do and that you don't have control over. And then also the things that you do have control over, there's like a second level to this chapter, which is actually just allowing your best to be enough, right? Once you've done your best over the things that you can control, which are you in this moment, it's out of your hands after that. There's no sense in beating yourself up over things that you can't control. So I don't know, some things worth thinking about, because right now in the chaotic times that we find ourselves in, if you do not understand what your role in all of this is, then the chances that you will continue to screw that role up are really, really good. Of course, we all do that. And of course, I wrote this chapter because I do blame myself for my parents' divorce, because I have beat myself up after marriage, after relationships end. Because of all of these things, I am writing this book from the trenches saying we have got to be better, and we can be. But it starts with understanding what is actually within our domain or sphere of influence. Love you guys. Have an amazing whatever day you're listening to this. We'll talk later on Morning Coffee.